90 to 93 FM on digital radio, and you can also listen to us live online. It's 1 o'clock now, time for the news read by Ian Skelly.
David Cameron has hinted that broad government payouts like child benefit could be cut to fund what he described as a refreshingly radical reform of the welfare system. The Prime Minister told the BBC that some universal payments were no longer affordable. More details are expected later of proposals to replace the current range of benefits with a single universal credit. The Conservative conference begins in Birmingham this afternoon. A British soldier has been killed in an explosion in southern Afghanistan. The Ministry of Defence say he was from 1st Battalion, the Royal Gurkha Rifles. His family has been informed. The United States is expected to issue a travel alert later today, urging Americans in Europe to be vigilant and stay away from crowded places. It follows intelligence reports suggesting the threat of an Al-Qaeda commando-style attack on European cities. Voting is underway in Brazil to choose a successor to President da Silva. His favoured candidate, Dilma Rousseff, is widely expected to win, but she needs 50% of the vote to avoid a second-round runoff. The Foreign Office has named two of the three Britons killed in a plane crash in Peru. Andrew Brown and Gail Callow, who are both in their 30s, were on a light aircraft which came down near the ancient Nazca lines south of Lima. The third hasn't been formally identified. Delhi is preparing to stage the opening ceremony of the first ever Commonwealth Games to be held in India. The organisers hope it will restore the country's image after the build-up was dogged by concerns about hygiene, safety and corruption. The Prince of Wales will open the Games jointly with the President of India. In golf, play is due to resume at the Ryder Cup in South Wales in around half an hour's time, following more heavy rain. The tournament at Celtic Manor will become the first in its history to go into a fourth day. So what of the weather forecast? Not good if you're used to playing golf in Florida, I suspect. A generally wet afternoon with a band of rain spreading northeastwards. It'll clear most areas by this evening, though rain will linger in the south and east of England overnight. And that's the BBC News and the weather at 2:30 past one.
And it was read by Ian Skelly. Well, now on Radio 3 as part of the BBC's Focus on Opera, here's Catherine Bott with the Sunday edition of the Early Music Show.
In today's Early Music Show, a rare treat, an English opera full of satire and sensuality, first performed at court in the early 1680s with a former royal mistress taking one of the title roles. John Blow's Venus and Adonis stands at the crossroads of masque and opera, looking back to the Stuart tradition of royal and aristocratic participation in this peculiarly English kind of theatrical entertainment, dating from way back to the Tudors. And it also looks forward to the all-sung, through-composed professional opera. It's not as well known as the work it influenced, Purcell's Dido and Aeneas, but it should be. And yes, we're broadcasting this miniature gem in full in a specially extended edition of the show. The performance we're going to hear, recorded at the 2010 York Early Music Festival, was given by Theatre of the Air, directed by one of Europe's leading lute players, Elizabeth Kenny. During rehearsals, I asked her about Venus and Adonis standing at the crossroads between masque and opera.
I think it means that it's the best of all worlds. It has the drama of opera and the really powerful human emotions that go on in that we associate with opera. Also, very importantly, it's sung all the way through. There's no spoken drama at all, as there is in some of the semi-operas or masques of the time. But it also has a bit of the glitz of a masque. It has a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And it's also commissioned to glorify Charles II.
Well, it goes quite an odd way about glorifying him, because one of the first things that happens is that Cupid, played by his illegitimate daughter, Lady Mary Tudor, in the first performance, comes on and says, "You're all a corrupt and dodgy lot, you at court."
But I think because the libretto was written by a woman, Lady Anne Finch, I have a feeling that she could get away with things that maybe male writers couldn't. Because there's a lot about Charles stroke Adonis being a little bit lazy, he can't be bothered to go hunting, and yet all his friends tell him he's very youthful and very sprightly. And there's a bit of a kind of nudge-nudge, wink-wink going on, and Cupid does point out all the corruptions of the court, but also points out that things could be so good if everybody just believed in nature and believed in women who tend to initiate desire in this piece.
And of course, believing in women is very pointed for the king, because the first Venus, Mary or Moll Davis, is an ex-mistress of his.
I'm Sophie Daneman, and I'm singing the role of Venus.
I'm Giles Underwood, and I'm singing the role of Adonis.
You have a very grown-up relationship, Venus and Adonis. It's not like Dido and Aeneas, is it, Sophie?
Oh, no, not at all. No, we really get a chance to show how much we feel for each other, even in the very first line that we say, Venus, Adonis, Venus. Adonis. It's all there.
Yeah,
it's all
joy.
There.
It's what the joy we of repetition, isn't it? Yes.
What's been and what's to come is all in those, the way we say those words to each other.
Well, there's so much similarity in many ways between the two works. One is much better known than the other, unfairly, in my view.
Well, we were talking about this the other day and wondering whether it was to do with the fact that there aren't any set pieces that you can take out, and that's maybe how a piece becomes more popular through an aria sung in concert. But in terms of the development of the relationship between the two, and even showing any sort of relationship, which there hardly is in Dido, I mean, you hardly get a chance to understand what it meant before you're supposed to feel terribly sorry for her that it's all gone wrong. Whereas here, there's so clearly a sort of incredibly grown-up and relaxed atmosphere between them. They clearly get on wonderfully well. When her upset happens, it's so much more moving because of the fact that we've had some idea of their closeness. Mm.
The fact that they've got a more grown-up, you called it a grown-up relationship, didn't you? It's a physical, it feels very physical,
it does.
Doesn't it? And your outpouring of grief at the very end is...
There's something extraordinary about it. I mean, it's like a sort of primal scream. I mean, it's so modern and so uncontrolled.
Yes, and I always find exceptionally moving the last words of Adonis. Mm. Let me on thy soft bosom lie. Yeah. Here I did wish to live, and here I beg to die. And that just brings tears to the eyes.
Absolutely. You get to see what could have happened, what they had planned for their lives together, and it doesn't get to happen. It's timeless, I think, ageless.
Let me on your soft bosom lie.
My name's Laura Soper, and I'm playing Cupid in Venus and Adonis.
And playing him very well. But of course, the original Cupid was Lady Mary Tudor, so you're meant to be a girl, and you succeed at that triumphantly, playing a boy. This is taking place in a church, this production. It's what they call semi-staged. So here you are now, wearing a most attractive sundress with a flower in your hair. But in the role of Cupid, you're going to wear your school uniform. Tell me why the costume change.
I'm wearing school uniform because we're supposed to be all naughty schoolgirls and boys, but when Adonis dies, I have to look more grown up, as if I've understood the world more. So I change into a pretty dress and walk mournfully.
And is there a moment in Blow's music where you feel that the tone does change and that you begin to understand the world more?
When I call the Graces, after that everything gets a bit more solemn because before I mess around quite a lot and have a bit of fun with everybody, but after that it's serious.
Behold my arrows and my bow, and I desire my art to show. No one bosom shall be found ere I have done without you.
One of the most entrancing things about this particular performance was the opportunity it gave to several local children, some of them very tiny, who played the parts of the little Cupids. Tell me about the Cupid's lesson.
Well, this again started out, I think, as a piece of satire. John Blow's day job was teaching the children of the Chapel Royal to read and write, as well as music. And so there is a scene where they have to learn how to spell all the people who are on their hit list. So all the people that they're going to make fall in love. And the rather tricky word which they hit on is mercenary. So the people who will love only for money. So all these poor Cupids have to learn how to spell mercenary very laboriously. So we do it where we've given them some laminated letters to go with. So they all have to hold them up at the right moment and shout out the letters and the words. And it can be quite riotous, but usually the audience end up also learning how to spell mercenary.
We're here at St. Michael's Belfry Church, and we're Cupids in the opera Venus and Adonis, which is about Venus, the goddess of love, and Adonis, who is a man. I think it'll go well tonight.
Yeah. Nothing's really gone wrong so far, not really too bad.
I just hope that my shirt, which is in the wash, dries in time, because
yeah,
even though it's nice and windy, we can't put it outside to dry because of the rain.
The action of Venus and Adonis takes place at the mythological court of Venus, goddess of love, but the parallels with the very real mores of King Charles II's court are made clear from the prologue, when a saucy Cupid proclaims his power over humankind and declares, "Courtiers, there is no faith in you." Act I opens with Venus and her swain Adonis in the throes of passion, but she tears herself away and urges him to go hunting. She tells him, "I would not have my lover tire." And besides, she needs to reload her magazine of beauty while he is striding out in the fresh air. In Act II, Venus coaches her son Cupid and the little Cupids in the sly art of mischievous matchmaking, and the Graces dance attendance. True to the masque tradition, the opera is laced with courtly dances. Then the intimate, mocking mood is abruptly dispelled as Adonis returns in Act III, mortally wounded by a boar. Venus bids a heartfelt farewell to the lover she unwittingly sent to his death and calls for her retinue of Cupids to mourn by her side. In this performance of Blow's Venus and Adonis, Venus is sung by Sophie Daneman, Adonis by Giles Underwood, with Laura Soper as Cupid, whose cocksure prologue is preceded by an elegant overture.
Thank you. Oh!
the foolish, ugly, and the old. Every youthful swain
Yeah. As for a huntsman that to meet with able horses and good hounds to rain the field.
Lackney has passed and first part she is old. Bring hither Leyden, he is strong.
Around you smiling cupids play. boy, hast thou been reading those lessons and refined parts by which thou mayst set a
Yeah. did it not make the best of lovers part?
Ye cruel gods, why should not I have the great privilege to die?
Love, mighty love, as my kind bosom fire, shall I for want of vital heat expire? And death hath raid this heart, love's faithful kingdom to invade.
Oh, the grim monster gains the day with thy warm blood life. Still.
In that performance of John Blow's opera Venus and Adonis, given by Theatre of the Air and recorded at the 2010 York Early Music Festival, Venus was sung by Sophie Daneman and Adonis by Giles Underwood, with Laura Soper as Cupid. Helen Neves, Caroline Sartin, Jason Darnell and Frederick Long were shepherds, shepherdesses and huntsmen, with a group of children from local schools in York as the Little Cupids. The musicians of Theatre of the Air were led by Rachel Podger, and the whole performance was directed by Elizabeth Kenny.
And today's Early Music Show, which was recorded at the 2010 York Early Music Festival, was presented by Catherine Bott. The recording was edited for broadcast, and the producer was Chris Wines. Well, next Saturday, Lucy Skeeping returns to the programme with a concert given by the ensemble Echo du Danube, and a programme inspired by the popular early dance known as La Folia. Always a bit of madness in the Early Music Show with Lucy Skeeping next Saturday at 1 o'clock.
To many, it's one of the best travel books of all time. Shiva Naipaul travelled through East Africa, looking at how the rhetoric of liberation impacted on day-to-day life. 30 years on, as African states celebrate a half century since liberation, Radio 3's Sunday feature retraces Naipaul's journey.
As Africa celebrates the 50th anniversary of 17 African nations this year, I'll be revisiting those questions posed by Shiva Naipaul. How have things changed since he wrote North of South 3 decades ago?
Joel Cubazo revisits North of South, a Radio 3 Sunday feature, starting at 9:30.
And that's tonight at 9:30. It's the start of a new two-part series, by the way. BBC Radio 3, it's 2:10. Time now for Radio 3 Requests with Fiona Talkington.
Hello again. Julie Whiting's chosen the ideal music for an October Sunday afternoon. Autumn.